regular phone?
Nope, you sound great actually.
Okay, perfect. Good. That'll help me to just take a note or something if I need to.
Great. So I am going to go ahead and start the recording. If everyone who isn't speaking or isn't involved could just make sure they're on mute when they're not up, that'd be great. And then otherwise, I think we're good to go if anyone has any questions. Okay.
Ready to roll.
Great. So Vanessa, you can take it away.
All right, here we go. Hi, and welcome to the U.S. Center for Safe Sports podcast series. Here at the center, we are dedicated to making athlete well-being and safety the centerpiece of sport culture. Our hosts are experts in the field who will connect with athletes, parents, volunteers, officials, staff members, and coaches to gain thoughtful perspectives on getting the best experience out of sport. Get ready to learn valuable information, shareable tips, and helpful resources to keep you engaged in the game. Happy listening, and welcome, Leslie.
Hello, and welcome to Keeping Your Child Safe in Sports, presented by the U.S. Center for Safe Sports. You can find us online at www.safesport.org. I'm Leslie Mitchell-Bond, and with me today is Suzanne Greenberg, Executive Director of the Michigan Children's Trust Fund. We're here today to discuss how parents can approach the topic of child safety and child abuse with their school-aged children. And we want to begin by addressing child sexual abuse specifically. Suzanne, we know that a child's early experience with organized athletics can set the stage for a lifelong joy of participating in sports, whether it's soccer, baseball, or gymnastics. How can parents lay the foundation for a safe, positive experience?
Gosh, Leslie, you're so right about that. Participation in sports for children allows them to develop those critical skills and confidence and a variety of different skills and physical strength, and they carry those all through their childhood. And so, as you've discussed on other podcasts, the ongoing open communication that parents have or caregivers have with children goes such a long way in protecting those kids. Hopefully, long before an experience with organized athletics begins, parents and children have had discussions about self-care and secrets and safety. If you're listening to this and you feel like you've not had enough of those discussions, start the conversation independent of the discussion about a new sports program or team. You don't really want a young child to learn to associate sports with threats to their safety. Now, as with all aspects of their lives, check in and see how they're doing. Remember when they return from school or a play date, we always ask open-ended questions just to gain an understanding. I think we need to do the same thing with sports, about their coaches, their coach, perhaps they have a one-on-one relationship with, but also their teammates. And at any age, always remembering that active, engaged listening on our part as parents is definitely one of the most important contents in our toolbox.
Thank you for those valuable tips. We also know that school-aged children might be at higher risk for sexual abuse, as all things sexual are very far from their thoughts at this developmental stage. Could you give us some examples about the kinds of conversations you might have to protect them?
Absolutely. We always say that when we're working in child abuse prevention that we really need to be mindful about the age of the child, but that communication is so important to keep them safe. And so we know at this day and age that many of our children are receiving cell phones as young as 10 and some even younger. And so, for instance, rules using their cell phones need to start immediately as well. Your phone's service provider should offer parental controls, and I think it's wise to take advantage of those. You also want to make sure that your child understands that no one is allowed to take pictures of their private parts, and no one should show them pictures of other people's private parts. I'm hoping that in the school that they're in or in the athletic program that they're in, that there's the phone use in locker rooms is prohibited. This should be standard procedure of any organization, but it's certainly worth emphasizing with your own child, no matter their age. Continue to incorporate those discussions we talked about a little bit earlier. Anything with sexual contact, keep it kind of as a normal part of dinner discussion. You might mention there's a local news story that generates some discussion about safety. it'll provide you with a window so you can reinforce that no one is allowed to speak to them or touch them in a sexual manner. Frequent check-in conversations after games and practices kind of help to keep you in the loop as to how the coach and the team dynamics are going. And great opportunity is the carpool conversation. It might raise questions, and then you can raise them with your child in private. I always found this extremely helpful as being the volunteer parent who drove so that I could overhear what the girls were saying, because typically they would forget that I was driving, and it was an optimum way to see what else I needed to work on and talk with my child.
That's really important advice. And I share that experience when I drove my children in carpools as well. Mm-hmm. And I think we have all seen the media gives considerable attention to reports of sexual abuse in sports, but we know that emotional abuse is common and can have significant long-term effects. What would you suggest that parents do to protect their children from a coach's or a teammate's hurtful words?
This is definitely an issue that doesn't get enough attention, Leslie. I think in general, if we're talking about school-age children, we refer to this phase of their development as concrete operational phase. And it's when their intellectual development, they've got a very kind of black and white view of the world. You know, a coach's attempt to help a child improve a technique might be interpreted as condemnation on their performance. It makes kind of belittling them if they're telling them they're not doing it right. But we don't want that to result in a child quitting a sport. So ongoing communication with them, helping to clarify if the coach was just not intending to criticize, but really things like, hey, keep your eyes on the ball, or, you know, make sure that your head's in the game. You know, rather than having our child take that personally, these are things that a coach says, and they may not be used to that, but it's important that they understand these are meant to help improve their game. And of course, if a coach is denigrating a child personally, we need to report that. I mean, a parent needs to be their child's best advocate without question. And they're kind of counting on us for that. So I would urge parents to take that role on. And if you observe a coach yelling or crossing a line with words, to kind of check in with your child to see if that's typical behavior. You know, if it's happened to your child, you can explain that you do want to talk to the coach on your child's behalf. And sometimes your child is going to say, oh, no, please don't do that. But, you know, just to have a conversation with the coach that empathizes with appreciating how challenging it can be to manage a group of, let's say, 9-year-olds. And I certainly appreciate, you know, all the time that the coach dedicates to the team. But when you're yelling at my son or daughter, you know, it kind of makes them lose focus, right, and loses confidence. And I found that they respond a whole lot better with encouragement and, you know, let them know that, you know, you're there and that you hope they understand, and perhaps even volunteer in some way so that it might be that there's too many children and the coach needs some assistance. So another way we can prevent coaches or teammates from using hurtful words is to remind them of the importance, and this is for our children, to remind them of including and supporting their teammates. I think that this is one of the most important skills that our children learn in playing sports, to understand the importance of teamwork, and suggesting that they pass or throw the ball to all the teammates and not just their friends. I can remember a group of kids running down the soccer field, 4 out of whatever the number is, 11 or something, and they're running in a clump and forgetting that there were other kids to play. It just reinforces the notion of treating others how you want to be treated. Let's see, and given children are adjusting to sports with so many rules and so much structure than when they were younger, you know, parents really need to be an emotional rock. And I know that many of you, we are that rock for our kids, but particularly in sports, you know, sometimes they're going to hear things or see things, or maybe they're not as good as they'd like to be, and it's just not working out for them. You know, if we ask those questions after practice or games, and we try to focus on what they enjoyed the most or the least, rather than how they performed, that makes a big difference for them. Not everyone's going to be the star of the game, but everyone plays an important role. And the more we emphasize the focus on what makes the sport fun for them, the more likely they'll keep playing it. And that ultimately is what we want, to keep them, right, getting that exercise and the team experience. So following our child's lead, although it sounds extremely simple and definitely easier said than done, it's particularly, I think it's particularly difficult for us that have visions for our child in terms of being a successful athlete, perhaps like we were, but to keep in mind what it is their skills are and their strengths so that we can follow along with them. And it's really important for our kids to know that win or lose, whether they're the star, whether they score a goal, whatever it is, we just really love to come watch them and play.
Yes. I just love to watch you play. Seven really, really helpful words. With respect to emotional abuse, I imagine that parents might confront both coaches who kind of behave overzealously towards a child with superior skills that they really want to see excel and move up, and then some whose behavior might seem really harsh towards children who are less athletically inclined. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, that's a really great point, Leslie. I think all the coaches, anyone who designates time to coach children is usually having goodness in their heart. And so their intentions are excellent. They may be pushing someone athletically because they see some great skills in them, moving them toward a more challenging level or even a higher rated team. That requires more practice and travel and additional time that definitely will be a responsibility of the family. These are the times when it's important for us as parents to kind of go over what our family values are and our goals in terms of avoiding, you know, making sure a child is, if they're not interested in getting ahead or being on the A team or perhaps playing in a high school or even college, that's not on their plan. They don't even think about that. To avoid them going down a path that just got too much pressure, whether it's physical or mental or even financial, certainly a burden on the family, it's important to have that conversation that both parents and children are interacting about that, because certainly the coach may see some skills that they want to nurture, but the child definitely needs to have their heart in it. So the transition from equal participation when all kids are sort of similar skilled, and then the competition and challenges increase as they go get older in their school age. Team sports, they'll host tryouts, and suddenly those kids that they were playing with that are their friends now are the very competition that may make the team if they don't, and vice versa. So that kind of enhanced competition is part of what sports are as we get more specialized, as kids just learn to play one sport really well and perhaps become the best at that. It's important that we don't want them to get so caught up in their excellence at that level that we ignore some unsafe behaviors or some things that the coaches may be saying or doing. You know, again, keeping the conversation going at the family table about family discipline rules, so they know that if somebody is breaking that rule, they're comfortable to come talk to you. That's why keeping that open conversation is so important, so that they're always comfortable coming to talk to you about whatever that difficult issue is.
Yes, it's really quite challenging at this age because rules are very important to them, but we know that they don't want to be labeled as a tattletale. So what are your guidance is the best way to make sure children will feel comfortable sharing secrets with us as parents?
This is such a good thing, and a good question, a good area. And we get asked, I've been asked this so many times in my career, because parents want to address this issue of secrets. And yet we all know it's fun to have a surprise party, or it's fun to keep something from someone and then go, ooh, you know, we used to say the best part of a secret is a surprise. And so I think that we want to educate our children, again, at the very outset, when they're very young, about secrets, that we don't keep those secrets, and finding that good time to discuss with our children the way that we respond to behavior that maybe a grown-up is doing something inappropriate. If you're in a situation, for instance, and a family member says something or does something inappropriate, immediately following that, it's an opportunity to share with your child perhaps how that was inappropriate and what you would want to do differently. And that conversation, it can include the different kinds of responses that we would have to something inappropriate. If it's unsafe, you know, that you would want to know if another adult is treating your child in an unsafe way. You know, the goal is, I think it's important as parents that we remember, the goal is not to scare our children, but make sure they know that they need to be comfortable coming to you, and that we're not going to overreact. We're not going to fix everything, but we are there to listen and believe them. The most important thing I can say to those listening is that we are the people that they trust, and that they, even though they sometimes, as they get older, they will roll their eyes and look as though they don't, but they really are counting on us to be their advocates and to keep them safe. So talking to your children about other adults in the world, they need to know who those people are that they can consider safe. But we also as parents need to be ready to hear who they may feel not safe around, who we think is perfectly safe. So in my own experience, the abuse was my father and my grandfather. And so if I would have asked my mom, she would have told me they were safe. So we have to be ready to hear that as well. But as a parent, the safe persons are those people that we believe that share our values about how we treat children. And so we would expect that they would tell us immediately if something is up, right? For our children, safe should mean that they never feel afraid of that person and that they feel comfortable telling them things. So for some families, it could be your aunts or your uncles. It could be a grandparent. It was not in my case, but it certainly could be. And for others, a trusted adult might be a best friend's parent or a teacher or a caregiver or even their doctor or their pastor. You know, your goal is to really expand the circle of those that they can trust and to help them know that if they have a bad feeling in their tummy when they talk to this person and they make them uncomfortable, they need to trust that. And so we're learning to teaching them to learn how to build that trust in themselves. So making sure they know how to contact and talk to those safe grown-ups if they ever are afraid and maybe you're not accessible, you know, to make sure that your children understand that even adults they trust might make mistakes. So the most important lesson is that their parents, that you will always be there to listen and support them, and that you believe them. And remember that we got to clarify that making behavior mistakes, not following rules, is different from making skill-related mistakes, and that they should not be punished for trying and learning new skills. You know, safe coaches, they understand the difference.
Thank you, Suzanne. Really appreciate your sharing both personal and professional experience and guidance for all parents out there listening. Are there any other tips that you'd want to share before we end today's podcast?
Thank you so much, Leslie, for allowing me to be here. And I would say yes, I just have a couple. And I suppose I'd return to where we started this podcast and emphasize communication. We just can't emphasize that enough. Asking our kids open-ended questions that can't be answered with the yes, no, or fine. It becomes increasingly important as they become older. Those of you who have middle and even high school kids, you're probably chuckling right now at the number of uh-huhs you get or yeah that you get or even eye rolls. But trust me when I say that I have now a 26 and a 31-year-old that played competitive sports, and they hear you. They just don't look like they hear you. So our small children, obviously, they're listening. They hang on every word. And as they grow up, they still are. They just don't look like it anymore. So it's important that we take that time to listen to their responses. While we're at home, we're working on any of their worries and listening to their stories that they want to share about anything. I've often said, you know, when we are there for them, we spend the time up front, then they can share more time with us on the back end as they get older. When they know we're there for them, they will be there for us. And I have to say that, you know, most parents, our gut instinct is to fix it. We want to hurry up and jump in and fix something that's wrong. But resisting that urge and listening to everything they have to say is the most important. We need to help them to learn to trust themselves. So you may learn more about how your child experiences the world, or you may become a hero. Many survivors have shared that if just one adult had really listened, further abuse could have been prevented. And I can absolutely attest to that, as well as others that I've spoken to, that they really wished they had one person that they could have felt that they felt they could have trusted at that point, and perhaps the abuse would have stopped.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Suzanne. Thank you, Vanessa. And thanks to all of you for listening.
Remember, if you're interested in more podcasts or more resources about keeping your child safe in sports, go to www.safesport.org.